Well, hello, everybody. Oh, you even imitated that really ugly British accent. That was cool. Do that again. That was great. Yeah, sure. Whoa. Well, welcome to Crossroads. My name is Todd, and it's good to be with you. And as Christy mentioned, we're in this series called ID, which stands for identity. And we're taking a look at some of the things that we have absorbed into our persona or into our identity over the course of our life that have defined and shaped the way that we see the world, whether or not they're actually the way that God wants us to see the world or has made us. And it's kind of like we're like these, you know, those like pieces of flypaper in really bad restaurants or like truck stops. You guys have no idea what I'm talking about, do you? Oh my gosh, I'm such a hick. but the flies will fly around and like, you know, they get stuck to it. We go through life and we have these, we absorb these things like flypaper and we just like suck them in and they become a part of the way we see the world and they even become filters through which we hear things. Somebody might compliment us and all of a sudden it's like an insult or something. And so, the first week we talked about the concept of surviving versus thriving and that a lot of us have settled for surviving. And we have labeled it as thriving. And so we kind of move from day to day, never really thinking about cause and effect and what might be happening in my life as a result of things that have happened before. And in week two, we talked about the idea of lies. And Brian Wells talked with us about the fact that a lot of us are believing lies about ourselves that were given to us by parents or friends or circumstances or whatever that have started to shape our life. And you know what? Some of those lies really work for us. So, for example, you know, my need to overachieve might lead to me making a whole lot of money, and that works for me. That's really good. But at the core of it, there's a lie that is telling me I have to succeed. If I don't succeed, then what are people going to think of me? So this week, we're actually going to do something a little bit different, and we're going to kind of have some folks up here who are going to share their ID journey and talk a little bit about what they've been discovering in the midst of that, and one of them is Mr. Steve Manuel. Mm-hmm. Everybody say, yo, Steve. That was good. Wow. And Steve is going to come up and join us. And Steve, how's your ID group going? Wait till you get your motivational speaker mic on.
It's going okay.
Mr. Tony Robbins, ladies and gentlemen.
It's going good.
Good.
I'm in a couple of groups. And
see, you're one of those overachiever people.
Right, sure.
I'm defined by the number of ID groups I am in.
Give me a religious activity and I'll, you know.
Is each ID group, do you have a different, like, personality in each group or something?
Yeah, I introduced myself as Jim in one of them. And I'm Jim and I'm an accountant. One of the groups I'm in is couples and it's been really interesting. That just having people tell their thrive lines to each other, most of us are in these groups, so we know what the thrive lines are. And
how many people are in a group, by the way? ID group. Awesome. Yeah, I think like 90-something percent.
People. Sweet. Yeah. Well, just sharing our thrive lines with each other is really making light bulbs come on for a lot of people, and we're just kind of seeing, whoa, I did this in my 30s. That's because I was reacting against something that was said about me when I was 5. And we have a couple that's been married over 10 years and they're just kind of going, whoa, I didn't understand this stuff about my spouse. So it's really been fun.
That's great. Yeah. Very cool. You want to share any deep, dark secrets with us?
No, but one thing that did come to mind is as we're sitting here, just to let everybody know, this is the way that we're sitting the whole time. So if this view stinks for you, then you could... You might want to move later. I'm
Or not.
I was just
depending on.
Depending on what your lies are that you might believe.
Well, hey, let's bring Dave up. Dave Russell is going to share some. Everybody say, yo, Dave.
Yo, Dave.
Oh, they
what
love
up?
You. All right. So, Dave, you are in an ID group as well.
I am.
Only one.
Only one.
Right. And what's going on in your group?
My group, a bunch of guys that we've been getting together for about the last 6 years, we are also meeting as an ID group, and it has been, we have learned things about us as individuals over the last 2 weeks that we have never discussed or put on the table in the past 6 years. So playing the game and going through the journal and the guide has really given us permission to kind of expose ourselves in a healthy way. It's given us permission to really put ourselves out there. So it's really been amazing. It's really been amazing. So
that's great. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
So you want to, you have a couple things to share with us.
I do. For those of you who are not yet in an ID group, you haven't really felt comfortable with who you might have been paired with before, or you're still looking to find that really good mix, there's an opportunity for you this Wednesday night at 7 o'clock to come here. We are having on-site ID groups. This is an open group, so it doesn't matter if you are married, if you're single, if you're male, if you're female. You can come here. No RSVP is required. You can just come and engage in a group from 7 to 9 o'clock. So there is still hope. There is still an opportunity for you to become a part of this journey.
There is hope for you.
There is hope. There is hope. For those of you who might have visited crossroadscommunity.net, the website, and have looked under the ID banner to look at some of the tools and resources that we have available to you, we are also blogging. We have people who are really capturing their ID journeys over the next 4 weeks now. And it's an opportunity for you to learn from people and also to share your experiences. So
for those of us who haven't been on the web in like 5 years, what is a blog?
A blog is really exchanging messages, exchanging ideas with each other virtually. So I am one of the bloggers who are out there who I'm just kind of sharing my ID journey. And so I will post a message out there and you can respond back to that with something agreeing, disagreeing, or saying, I'd like to build on that and here's something that's going on with me.
Cool.
So that's what's going on with that. Check that out. It's really cool. And for next weekend, we are suspending the ID journey as it relates to main stage. So your ID journey will still continue outside of Crossroads. But next week, we're going to be celebrating our 10-year anniversary. So come check it out. Come check it out. It'll be a great time for us to celebrate really what is going on here. And the lives and the fruit that is being produced at Crossroads.
And this is actually a really biblical principle. You know, a lot of times in scripture, God will say to groups of people, like, you're going to stop doing everything you're doing. Like, you're planting, you're harvesting, which, you know, I mean, we all do a lot of that.
Sure.
You know, planting, yes. Harvesting stuff. But, you know, God will say, stop, even though your life depends upon it, your livelihood depends upon it, we're going to stop. We're not going to do that. And for this period of time, you're just going to celebrate. And so next week, we're going to stop all of this ID stuff and we're just going to celebrate what God's been doing in our lives and what God's done in our community. So it's going to be great.
Sweet.
Lots of fun. There will be much rejoicing.
Yes.
Yay.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. Steve, can you pray for us?
Yes.
Before we move forward?
Yes.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Let's pray. Well, God, we're about to hear Kelly's story, and it's my belief that just listening to other people's stories in the way that you kind of set us free from lies in our past and heal us up in our hearts. Just hearing that, there's power in that. So I would ask that power from Kelly's story would just kind of be released throughout the room, and that you would meet us all as we, I want to be talking with you in my heart even as I'm listening to Kelly talk. So we ask you to do that. Amen.
Amen.
Well, as Steve mentioned, we're about to invite someone else up. Before we do, some folks are going to come forward with these little frisbee-looking things, and they're going to pass them down the rows. And this is our chance to give. If you want to give financially, feel free to do that. We want to learn to be generous because God is generous. And so one of the things we want around here is just to give opportunities for people to give. And that funnels or that fuels things like ID journey, guides, you know, trips to Mamelodi, South Africa to build AIDS hospices, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, feel free to give if you want when the Frisbees come by. If not, feel free to let that pass by. And in a minute, we're going to invite someone up to fill this other chair. And that person is Kelly Russell. Before we invite her up, let's take a look at a little bit of her story.
So this was me. I was born at Audubon Hospital in Louisville, Kentucky. That's Louisville, not Louisville. An only child. My parents divorced when I was 2. Then when I was 3, I went to live with my dad at 4309 Dawkins Court, an awesome cul-de-sac, big blacktop, great for kickball, wiffle ball, and big wheels. My dad's older sister was the counselor at my elementary school. When I started kindergarten, she helped out, mainly reminding my dad I probably shouldn't wear the same thing to school 2 days in a row. The kids in my class even started calling her Aunt Ruth. My dad attended night classes at U of L. When he needed to register or pick up his grades, he'd take me with him. My next door neighbor was my babysitter, and she was like a mom to me. She took me to vacation Bible school every summer and to church on Wednesday nights. I was basically a part of her family. I don't know when I started liking boys. Probably I always liked boys. Dad told me if a boy tried to kiss me, I should hit him in the nose. So he helped me practice my jab. I had three big crushes when I was five. Scott Thompson, a boy in my class. Sean Cassidy. I had an awesome Sean Cassidy t-shirt. And Brian Sipe, my dad's a huge Browns fan. My mom moved to West Texas for a couple years and came back when I was six. Living the bachelor life as a six-year-old girl meant tons of football. We watched a lot of Cleveland Browns on TV. My dad made up a game called Find Jim Brown on the Sidelines. Oh, look, there he is. My stepmom came on the scene when I was seven. My sister came when I was nine. My first boyfriend showed up when I was 12. Brandon. He was super funny, but a lousy roller skater. He gave me a silver necklace. Then he just up and moved to Chicago. And, you know, I just felt relief. We moved on up to the east side, moving on up, when I was 13. Our house was bigger, and I remember there was a lot of mauve. I think I have mauve baggage. In high school, I went to a lot of formal dances. I was the good friend fallback date. I went to college. I majored in sorority. Sophomore year, I got my first car, a maroon Cavalier 5-speed. Most importantly, it had enough trunk space to haul five girls' luggage to Florida for spring break. I worked for the college newspaper and also a small blues bar called the Big Apple Cafe. They served cheap pitchers and unauthentic Mexican food. I was late getting back my junior year because I just had to go to Woodstock, you know, peace, love, and Pepsi products. I used to be great friends with Brett Favre. Okay, that's not true. However, he dated one of my sorority sisters and called our sorority house a lot. It was so great when she wasn't there because I would get to take a message. Oh, Brett, well, she's not here. Does she have your phone number? When would you like her? Anything to talk to Brett. This has nothing to do with my story. My senior year in college, I met my husband. Though I didn't know he was my husband. I thought he was just some guy that wouldn't stop calling me. Stop calling me. We started dating and he broke my heart for a minute. Only a minute. This was a good thing, mainly because it drove me to a lot of prayer. Oh God, he broke my heart. Oh God, I'm so sad. No, seriously, it drove me to a lot of prayer. And incidentally, well, if God can be incidental, I grew super close to God and I haven't looked back. 2 years later, we married and moved to Henderson, Kentucky. 6 months after that, we moved to Cincinnati because it wasn't Henderson, Kentucky. I decided to become a high school English teacher and went back to school. When we first started coming to Crossroads, I thought it was a cult, but we stayed anyway. We bought our first house and, you know, paid our way into adulthood. After 5 years of marriage, I became a mom. Look, there's this company. I left teaching and decided to stay home full time. Then we did it again. Well, yeah, we did it again. And, oh, there he is. Scooby-Doo. And here I am today. That's David, Mac, Bodie, and me. Okay, all this was really just a list of facts strung together in loose chronological order. These are my dots floating in space. To get the whole picture of me, you have to connect them with lines of emotion, joy, and pain. However, this only gives me an image of who I have been. It doesn't really answer who I'm supposed to be. That's the quest I'm on right now, and all I know for sure is my name is Kelly Russell.
So would you all make welcome Kelly Russell.
Kelly.
Hello.
So Kelly, can I call you Kelly?
Please, call me Kelly.
Kelly, you have, you've been on an interesting journey. Mm-hmm. This ID series, even specifically, is something that has, brought up things that you went through a few years ago, which sort of modeled the ID journey itself. But, you've been forced to sort of deal with a pretty significant lie that had defined a big part of your life. Mm-hmm. So why don't you just share a little bit about
what
that journey was?
Yeah, I, lived for, most of my life embracing a title that I had given myself, that I was a man hater. And basically it was just kind of like, you know, girlfriends coming to me, having trouble with their boyfriend or whatever. And I would just kind of say, I don't know what to tell you. I'm a man hater, you know, dump him. And, you know, I just, didn't trust men, things like that. And it all stemmed from, you know, like the video showed, I'm super close with my dad, was raised by my dad, and my dad started telling me at an early age that boys were not to be trusted. They were going to say things to me do things, even tell me that they loved me, to get what they wanted. And as I got older, you know, he spelled that out for me. They're going to say whatever they want to say or whatever they need to say to get in your pants. And, don't trust them. And then as I got even older, you know, college, it was, you know, you better make sure you wear the pants in the family. And if you do decide to get married, you better make sure you make more money than him. And he's going to leave you. Don't trust him. All that kind of stuff.
A lot of pants talk.
A lot of pants talk, you know.
The pants fit.
Yeah.
The pants fit.
The pants fit.
It's all about the pants.
Well, I think we've settled that one.
Yeah.
Excellent point, counselor.
And if there's anything you're believing about pants, we all here today have pants lies that we need to uncover.
Okay.
Sorry. You know, in the beginning, you know, it was, oh, that's not true. You know, what about, you know, the little Disney movies I was watching and stuff like that. But then, you know, middle school have, a couple of crushes go awry or something. And, you know, it didn't take much for that lie, my dad was telling me to play out as true. And this was something my dad was telling me that was, absolutely best of intentions. He wanted to protect me. You know, he had a responsibility to protect his little girl, and his thing is, I'm a guy, I know what guys are thinking. And this was because he was afraid that I was going to get hurt. And so out of that fear, he wanted to protect me.
So I think this is a really interesting point, that your dad was doing something he thought was in your best interest. He was doing something with the best of intentions.
Absolutely.
But was clearly motivated by fear on his part. Mm-hmm. And so what that reproduced in you was not protection and a sense of safety, but was a sense of fear. Like mm-hmm. you became afraid of men.
Right.
Because what he had told you was born out of fear mm-hmm. in him.
Yeah. And that was afraid of men in the sense of, well, I'll, you know, do it to them before they do it to me, or, you know, and things like that. You know, I've also had really great friendships with men, and, friendships. I have great friends, that I grew up with and went to high school with that I'm friends with to this day. And that was confusing for me. And it, you know, it played out kind of like, you know, one guy, for example, in high school, a friend of mine called and said, hey, he was dating two girls named Michelle. And he called a week before this big dance and said, hey, I need you to go with me this weekend. You know, and I'm like, what happened to Michelle's?
Which you know? In no way reinforced your view of men at
right,
all.
Right, exactly. Yeah, right. So, you know, I'm like, well, what happened? And, you know, he's like, oh, you know, Michelle called, left a message, and I returned the wrong Michelle's phone call. So they found out, and I'm like, which one found out? He's like, I don't remember. So for me, it's like, okay, well, dust off the sequin dress and I'll go with you. And boy, am I glad I'm friends with this guy, because the friendship was real. And but if I had been, you know, the third Michelle, I would have gotten hurt. So, and I was in boyfriend-girlfriend relationships where I was mean. I was mean to those guys.
And, what does that mean?
Well, I just was, if I was paid a compliment, it was, you know, you look really nice today. And the first reaction would be, I would want to say thank you. And, you know, I would quickly connect the dots in my head and, oh, you don't really mean that. You know, you're just saying that because you want something else. And so you look really nice today. My response would be F you, you know, and that's how I was.
Whoa. Probably not what they expected.
I don't think that's what they expected. But, you know, and it just kind of became a reputation, and I would just be like, hey, sorry. And, you know, it was just, oh, that's Kelly. She's a man hater. And my girlfriends would warn their boyfriends, you know, hey, she might slam me against the lockers, but it's because she loves me, you know, that kind of thing.
So you actually absorbed that tag. Like, you would wear that tag, man hater, with pride.
This
even.
Is me. Yeah, this is me. And, that, you know, friends affirmed it. And, you know, I can see where that, you know, damaged a lot of people. You know, I wish I had a boyfriend in high school that I wish I could, tell him I'm sorry for how I treated him. He was a great guy. He was a great friend to me. And, you know, the truth is at my high school reunion, he wouldn't even speak to me. Yeah. And,
he might be listening to the download. Yeah. You want to say his, you know,
yeah,
say
Sean,
something
if you're listening, I'm really sorry. but you know, it, you know, yeah, it, and I did, you know, I did that. I have, you know, a little sister that I absolutely told her when she started, you know, as soon as she started school, I started telling her the same thing. My dad didn't have to tell her, I did.
Hmm.
And so in college, it played out in college and continued. And, I got to this place of, on the outside, I was like, hey, that's me. You know, I'm independent. I'm tough. I don't need men. You know, you're all jerks anyway. But what was really happening is I was starting to get really depressed that I was seeing my friends in great relationships, healthy relationships, and I was in weird relationships where, like, I couldn't go out in the daylight. And, you know, I was like, you know what? I am not attracting husband material. I must not be wife material. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, that I really would like to have a family someday. And I don't want to believe that that's true, but it must not be true for me. I'm not worthy of a good relationship like that.
Worthy. So it actually went from I'm a man hater to now feelings of I'm not
right.
worthy.
Right. Yeah.
Not worthy of that.
Can I interject here?
Please.
I'm not sitting up here because I have anything wonderful to add to Kelly's story. We're just trying to model sort of an ID group. So this is something that I'm hearing in Kelly's story. So I'm going to play my build and challenge card here. And there's a couple of things that I observe. One, just as a build to what Todd said earlier, that we all tend to think in all of our lives that good things can come out of fear. We all think that in different ways. So I'm afraid of the future, but look, a really good thing that's happened is we've put a whole lot aside in savings, and we have huge insurance policies. Isn't that a good thing? My answer would be, no, that's not a good thing, because it came from fear. And all it is a monument to your fear. And I have a fear of being, somebody might say, I have a fear of being rejected, so I'm going to perform really well in my job. Isn't that a good thing? No, it's not a good thing, because it came from fear. So again, with your dad, he thought this line that he fed you could be a good protective thing for you. It wasn't a good protective thing for you. It sowed fear in you. And one thing that the Bible juxtaposes with fear, with fear is love. He says the opposite of fear is love. That's interesting to me, because I always thought the opposite of love was hate. But in the Bible, it's fear versus love. So I see this playing out in your life because you have taken on this fear that I'm going to be hurt. So you do what anybody with a rejection background does, and you push people away. You shall not reject me. And I'll do it to you first. You push people away. Then there's this label that you put on yourself. I'm the rough one. I'm hard for people to be around. I'm unlovable. I'm not gentle. I'm not sweet. And so you are living out this persona. And it's just interesting to me, and I really want to learn this, that as you received fear, it became for you a detriment to your receiving love. That's very interesting to me.
And even not just love from other people, but love from God, because it started to define the way you saw yourself. I am unworthy. Not only am I not going to have that, I'm going to hurt you before you can hurt me, but I'm fundamentally not worthy of receiving love from people or from God.
Yeah, God must not think I'm good enough to be someone's wife. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not measuring up. And, you know, yeah, there were other lies that contributed to that. You know, there's so many. And it's so amazing how the enemy works so hard to make sure all your lies fit together into this perfect puzzle of a false self, you know. And, you know, there were lies that I believed, just like about, you know, that I got from my church experience growing up, that, you know, I just couldn't measure up anyway. And who I was as a person didn't fit that right mold, you know, so it kind of all went together.
When you talk about the enemy, because that's something we haven't really talked about yet in the midst of the ID series, but the idea that the Bible talks about, there is an enemy who is working against us to, basically, Jesus says, there's a story from Jesus' life where he says, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come that they might have life to the full.
And would you repeat that slower?
The thief mm-hmm. comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I, Jesus, have come that they might have life to the mm-hmm. full. And the idea being that there is a person, a force, an entity in this world that is trying to steal from us. He's trying to kill us. Ultimately, that's his goal, is to kill us, because we're made in God's image. So he wants us to go away. And to destroy us. and we're being stolen from, we're being killed, and we're being destroyed, and a lot of times we don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting in this to me is that, you know, there was nothing in you when you were born that prevented you from receiving love. You were perfectly able to receive love. You're created for it. You're created for a relationship with God. And over time, you started absorbing these things into you that made it incapable for you to receive love or to experience fullness.
Right. Yes.
You were stolen from.
Yes. And I actually came to understand what a real relationship with God was when I was a senior in college, about the same time that I was also like, well, I guess I'm just not wife material. But I did begin to follow Christ, and in that was just saying, okay, stuff's not working out for me with my romantic relationships, and so I'm just going to stop. And enter David Russell trying to woo me, and you know, I was
what
just,
did that look like, Dave? Can you give us a
like the video?
That was
how
really,
about this?
Over.
What about this one?
Over.
That was really accurate. It was really, you know, my roommate's like, "Hey, David Russell called. You can call him back." No, and you know, he's on the phone. Hang up. And it's true. And but it was, you know, it was, I'm not that girl anymore, and I'm not really sure what kind of girl I am, and I'm just not interested. Just leave me alone.
Now, Dave, talk a little bit about your perspective on that whole thing. Like, yeah. What was going on in your world?
At that particular point, I had accepted Christ when I was, a teenager, and, you know, had never really established my relationship with him. It was just, I believed it, and so I continued on. I got into college, and just, you get that freedom to use the word loosely, and I just went buck wild. I mean, I was at a place of being so...
Was that a synonym that you used in college?
I said it a lot. I'm going buck wild tonight.
Did you introduce yourself as Buck Wild?
No. Actually...
No, but that song played. When you walk in the room, you just start hearing that song, Buck
Actually,
Wild.
I was introduced as Big Dookie, but anyway.
I remember that.
Okay. But at that particular point in my life, I was very far away from God, and so I was the guy that her dad warned her about. I was the guy who wanted that one thing, and that was my prime objective. That was what I was going for, and had heard the rumors and had heard the, you know, the talk with my frat brothers and everything, and, you know, that was my quest. That was my quest, and being hung up on and the door slammed in the face only provided more incentive for me, because it was about the chase. It was about the chase. It was about, you obviously don't know who I am. You obviously don't know, you know.
Little did you know she was having conversations with Brett Favre on the...
Right, right. But as I think back to my Thrive line, and so how I define thriving, at that particular point, I was the big fish. I was a big fish where we were in college, and everyone knew me, and, you know, how dare she not accept my phone calls and to you know, distance herself from me. And so, you know, and also at that point, I mean, I also had this fear in me of being rejected. Mm-hmm. You know, I was being rejected, and no, that's not going to happen to me.
So you've got your fear of rejection and arrogance thing working, and Kelly's got her fear of rejection and push people away thing. Somehow in the midst of that, you guys connect, you get married. Mm-hmm. Well, at what point do you start getting free of this?
Yeah, we were 4 years into our marriage, and the truth is we were doing great, actively trying to build our marriage, but in the dark, real moments, having conversations where I would say to him, you know, very matter-of-factly, you don't love me. You think you do, but you don't. And I love you. I'm not going anywhere, but one morning you're going to wake up and remember the truth about you as a man, and you're going to say, oh, I won the prize, and now I need to move on to another prize, and I really don't love her. This was all a mistake. And he was starting to talk about having family and things like that, and, you know, I was like, well, why would I want to put a child through a divorce and all that kind of stuff.
Having no reason from David to think that a divorce is coming.
Right, not at all.
But that was a piece of our relationship that we had talked about early on, was that we're both products of divorced parents. Mm-hmm. And we made a pact of never to go down that road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing all that we could to not ever have to go through a divorce.
Building into our marriage out of fear, interestingly.
Yeah. Can I just say about that? Todd referenced the enemy before. And, you know, if you're not a Christ follower, you just might think that's just a little bugbear that we assign that name to whatever problems that we have. And, I've known people like that. It's raining. The enemy is really after me today. You know, I'm not talking about that. But you look at this life here and you look at the fact that Kelly is in a marriage. These people both know God. David is loving her with everything in him, and yet there's something in her that refuses to be loved by her husband. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this. That's the enemy, okay? Mm-hmm. That's the enemy stealing from her. And she's been stolen from so long, and that I know that might feel like we're putting a super spiritual label on something. I'm just telling you that's reality. Because I believe by faith that how the Bible describes reality is reality, and that's it. Okay? Yeah. So I just want to pause.
And what's really interesting about that is that the enemy showed up in your life at an early age as protection and safety and, hey, just want good things for you. Mm-hmm. And 20, 25, 30 years down the road, all of a sudden it becomes this, I'm not worthy, I can't receive love, and all that. So it started off looking really, really great.
And leveraged the fear in my dad.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't my dad's not the
enemy. And there was probably something that leveraged fear that caused fear in him. And then, you know, I mean, it's just, we inherit all of these things.
Yeah. I think y'all are almost out of build challenge cards. What do you think? I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Keep going.
So you guys don't
want to be docked.
Yeah, here's what happens.
Yeah.
So I'm actually feeling a lot of anxiety in my career, and you know, we were kind of in a low place in our marriage, and it was just a lot of overwhelming stuff. And I had been in a group here at Crossroads that was reading a book called The Search for Significance by Robert McGee, and I had put it down. And it was still sitting by my bed, and I couldn't sleep, and I was like, well, I'll just start reading this book again. And what this book is about is how society contributes to what we believe about ourselves, that my significance is equivalent to what others think of me, or my self-worth is tied up in my performance, things like that. When the truth is, God sees us all as significant, and you don't have to be, I was learning I didn't have to be Kelly the blank. I could just be Kelly. And that book really taught me a lot about that. And so I wasn't using a lot of the ID language of truth and lies, but I was beginning to understand that rather than this was just the cards life dealt me, there are things about me that I thought made up my identity that aren't true. It's what, you know, somebody said something to me when I was a child, and I've been believing it. You know, what you have to say is not important. That was a lie that was said to me that I believed. And I thought that was just the truth. This book helped me begin to ask God to show me what the lies are and what the truth is.
And I would even say at this point, like, if you have not read that book, go out today, go buy it, read it, pick it up, read it. Seriously, it's called The Search for Significance, Robert McGee. And has been, anybody who's ever talked about this subject of identity and lies and all this stuff and really being unleashed and being free to how God made them to be, almost unanimously everybody references that book, that was a significant part of their journey. So read it.
Yeah. So I'm asking God, I'm prayerfully going through a little bit of this process of asking God, what are these lies? And a lot of it was impacting my job. I don't have to be, at the time it was, I don't have to be a teacher. That doesn't define who I am. We go to parties and it's like, oh, well, what do you do? Well, you know, I'm Kelly the blank, or, you know, Kelly the blank. And so that was really freeing. I didn't know it was going to impact my marriage, but we were in a little bit of a low place, and I don't remember everything that made up the conversation, but I remember that he was on our steps in our house, and I was at the bottom of the steps, and I'm kind of verbally pushing him away, and he just starts telling me all the things that he loves about me. And it was like, you know, low stuff, and how could anybody love that about me type stuff, and also great stuff, and just all these little things that he noticed about me and things that no one else knew about me, and he just didn't stop. And it was just, I love you, and I love this about you, and I love this about you. And he had always loved me unconditionally in our relationship. He was always doing that kind of thing. But in that moment, I just said, I believe you. And I just started crying. I was just like, I believe you. And, you know, it was, he knew what that meant when I said, I believe you. He knew what that meant. And it was an absolute turning point inside of me for our marriage. It was, you know what, I'm ready now to absolutely, you know, receive all that love from you and just be in this, whatever life throws our way, you know, this is real. Whatever happens, this is real. This is love. I'm in.
I have to say, way to go, David. Awesome. You know, we celebrate a lot of different things around here, but there's nothing that is more, there's a better picture of somebody being set free than the fact that you continue to love her. And then you won. Love always wins eventually, and love overcame that fear that was in her. That to me, whatever we do in South Africa, it's going to be this. It's going to be what we just saw here. Whatever we do in the inner city, it's going to be what we just saw. Whatever we do in Kids Club and CSM, it's going to be this. Just loving until we get to the place where I believe that I can receive love. Isn't that? There's something about the story that really reminds me. I'll just say, one reason I'm so attuned to this fear love thing, because that's part of my story, is feeling like, is one of my lies has been, I'm not really loved, and I'm going to be rejected. So I'm very sensitive, because God's brought me through this process, to hearing this stuff in other people. And there's a verse that just kills this out of the park. It's from the New Testament letter of 1 John chapter 4. And it says, there is no fear in love. Now, isn't that interesting? We talked about fear versus love, not hate versus love. And this verse says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. So with Kelly, the deal was she needed to overcome this fear, not by trying to be fearless, not by trying to be courageous. The way to overcome fear is to receive love. And that's what happened, finally, through David's constant, graceful, consistent, nonstop love. And so he was really God for you with skin on, and he just kept telling you, you're really loved. You don't have to go protecting yourself, because if you'll just let God, he wants to protect you with his love. So to me, that's a very powerful thing to understand, and it was played out in your life.
Mm-hmm. Woo! Yeah. And it was awesome, because then, you know, I wasn't even thinking about having children because out of fear. I don't want to do that to a child. I don't want to put them through a divorce or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the first awesome tangible thing was, hey, let's start having babies.
Right now.
So.
Right now. There's a really disturbing subplot to this whole sermon.
It's all love, baby. It's all love.
You remember it like that.
It's not all love.
And now let's watch another video. No, I'm just kidding.
So this lie got defeated in your life. And so you started a process of working back through your past and seeing where this came from. But that doesn't mean that it just all sort of vanished and you never had these issues for the rest of your life.
Right. And with the ID journey, I've revisited it and had, even more context and have, like in the ID guide, there's a process offered. And you know, the Thrive Line, I'm just putting it all in perspective. And, you know, it can come up my sister is in her 20s and, single and available, and here's her picture. No, I'm just kidding. And, you know, but I have to be careful, because I have, you know, if she, is, dating someone or something, you know, my first reaction is, are you gonna, you know, put your hands around his throat? Well, somebody's got to, you know, I'm like, you know, who is this guy? Or I make a new friend, I meet her husband, I immediately assume he's shady, and I have to go, wait a minute, no, God, you know, don't let me put that that lie is out of me, and don't let me put that on that person.
So
that's
now
not
that,
who
that's,
I am. I'm not going to put that on him. I need that out.
So now that's been brought out into the light. You can make a conscious choice now. You can
right.
say, I'm going to believe that or I'm not going to believe
right.
that. And you say, I choose not to believe that.
Right,
that
exactly.
is not who I am.
Yes, and that is freeing. That is freeing. I don't have to get bent out of shape knowing that, you know, if my, for example, my sister is seeing someone, I don't have, you know, it's freeing. I'm sure he's a great guy, you know? And, that happens with every lie that comes out and you break that agreement, there's more freedom there, you know, because that's not the truth. I don't have to believe that.
That's interesting you use that language because I think for a lot of us, we've moved through life making subtle agreements along the way about sort of compromising and saying, well, yeah, that's kind of who I am. So somebody will say, like I remember in the eighth grade, I was at Bloomingburg Junior High School sitting on the bleachers in the locker, or in the gymnasium. I remember a girl named Carrie pointed me in the chest and said, you're weird. Mm. You know, which, yeah, I know. Are you here, Carrie? Mm.
And Carrie, come on up.
And here she is, ladies and gentlemen. And to this day, I mean, really this whole ID journey has been for me realizing that a lot of times I go into a room and I feel like I don't belong. I feel like I'm on the outside or I'm always kind of like, even in my 20s, a lot of the time I was pushing people away. I didn't have a lot of close friendships because I felt like if they really got to know me, then they really wouldn't accept me. They really wouldn't receive me. Mm-hmm. And so just realizing that lie has played in the back of my head, even to the point of feeling like if I'm just successful enough, if I just do the right things, then maybe people will like me. They will accept me. And so that drove a lot of my 20s. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And we make really practical choices out of fear and out of lies. Mm-hmm. You know, we believe that, you know, life should be easy, or we believe that we're not good enough, or, you know, just, and
they seem like good things. Mm-hmm. They seem like good things. I mean, they always come packaged in these nice, neat packages that make them look like good things. Well, if you work hard, you'll make enough money, you'll have security, which is completely an illusion anyway.
Right.
You know, but you'll have security. And I mean, it's the American way, really.
Right.
It is. It's this lifestyle that we've sort of been sold.
Yeah.
Cool. So there we are. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if you, based upon your journey, if you could give us any bit of advice, like, you know, what do you think that we need to know from what you've learned in your journey as we're in the midst of our own journeys?
Well, one of the things I think about is when I, in my video, you saw that I wore glasses for a long time. And when I was 13, I got contacts for my birthday. And that was big hair days. And so about 6 months later or a year later, I was convinced my eyes had become significantly worse. I couldn't see the chalkboard at school. And I found myself getting a lecture from my eye doctor that I should not be wearing my contacts when I'm fixing my hair in the morning because I had so much hairspray in my contacts. And where's the story going, Kelly? Well, he explained to me that contact lenses are mostly made up of water. I think like over 97% water. And he explained that when stuff like hairspray comes into contact with contacts, it becomes a part of the contact lens. And he said, "You are your eyes are fine, but this gunk is getting into your contact and it's distorting what you see." Mm-hmm. And that's what happens, you know. God says in Psalms, He knit us together in our mother's womb, and He knows us that well. We come out and we're innocent, and then we are exposed to funk, whether it's TV or what someone says to us. And anyway, we take that in, and we take it in as a part of our identity, and it becomes a lens through which we see life, through which we see our world. And it's distorted, it's foggy, and we think that it's reality, and it's not. And so, you know, I learned how to clean my contacts. But in this process, also, you know, it's the same kind of thing. God, I don't want a distorted lens. I want to see life the way you want me to see it. I want to see myself the way you see me and the way you created me. And that's the main thing. The other thing is I have learned to ask God about my decisions. Am I making decisions out of love or out of fear? Mm. That's been big for me,
that's
too.
That's awesome. Well, for some of us, you know, this whole thing can sound like Dr. Phil or
yes.
like Oprah, you know? It's like this whole concept of lies and like being true to yourself and follow your feelings. That's not really what we're talking about. What we're talking about is there are things that God specifically says about us. Like you said, God created us specifically and says specific things to us. And we have a choice to make about whether we're going to receive what other people say to us, if we're going to take that in, or if we're going to say, no, I'm not going to believe that. I am going to believe what God says is true about me. And there are just a couple of things right now that we want to share. These are things that came out of my ID journey a few years ago when I sort of went through this process that became lie detectors for me. And I carry them around in my planner, actually, because I want to keep them in front of me all the time just to help me identify, are there things in my life that I'm reacting to as opposed to proactively being who God made me to be? And the first one, you might want to write these down. The first one is, are you afraid of anything? Is there anything in your life you're afraid of? Are you afraid of losing your job? Are you afraid of failure? Are you afraid of what somebody might say to you? Are you afraid of public speaking? I am. Are you afraid?
You too.
Are you afraid of anything in your life? Because when you're afraid of something, you're allowing something else to control you. Something else is determining what you're going to do. You're not giving God the freedom to say, I'm going to define you. Instead, you're being defined by something else around you. And that's not what God wants for you. God's love will always drive fear out of your life if you receive it. The second thing is this. Are there any unhealthy, repetitive, or addictive patterns in your life? Is there anything in your life that is controlling you? The Bible calls this sin, which basically is an archery term meaning to miss the mark. Is there anything in your life that is that is controlling you as an addictive pattern? Is something that's causing you to react to it rather than being proactively who God made you to be? And the third one is, this is fun for married people. Are you keeping secrets? Is there anything in your life that you're afraid if somebody else found out about that it would in some way tarnish what they think of you? Because if so, you're probably believing a lie at the core of that. There's something at the core of it that is defining you rather than allowing you to, or rather than you saying, God, I want you to define me. What's really cool about your story is that you brought these lies out into the light, or more aptly, God brought these things into the light and said, you have a choice. You can receive my love or you can receive this lie.
Right.
And it is always a choice for us. In the book of Romans, Paul is writing a letter to the church in Rome, and he's listing all these things. He's saying, greet this person, greet this person, greet this person. And right in the middle of it, it says this. It says, the God of peace will soon crush Satan under your feet. And then he goes on to greet this person, greet this person, greet this person. And what is really intriguing about that is it says the God of peace will soon crush Satan under whose feet? Under your feet, under my feet. That God gives us the choice to accept lies or to deny lies. And God desires to crush the enemy, to crush Satan. The word Satan means accuser, the one who accuses. To crush the accuser under our feet. And I am just really glad that you chose to do that.
I'd just like to add one thing. You said something about Oprah. And I just want to say a lot of...
You love Oprah, don't you?
Well, I'm going to say, I'm assuming there's men out there that know this, but I think a lot of the women in here know. Oprah says, once you know, you can't pretend like you don't know. And it's like the song that Stephen sang at the beginning. I've been fooled, but I won't be fooled again. And that, once you know these lies, you know, you can break these agreements and you can have freedom. Yeah. You can have the truth and you can begin to learn about who you were uniquely created to be by God. That is the freedom.
That's great. That's awesome. Steve, do you have anything you want to?
Nope. That's good.
Dave? Good?
Great.
Cool. Kelly, would you pray for us just to close us off?
Yeah. God, I want to confess to you that I have a lie that I don't believe I have anything important to say. And I know that everyone in this room has lies they need to confess to you. And God, I just want to ask for each person in this room that you put in them an overwhelming desire to get to the bottom of these lies and an overwhelming desire to break the agreements that they've made with these lies, and that they just seek your truth. And God, I ask for each person in here that you give them a real tangible experience this week that shows them you have freedom. I just ask for each person a taste of that freedom this week. And we just thank you for what you're going to do there. Amen.
Amen. Yeah. Hey, can you guys thank Kelly and Dave for sharing this story today? That's awesome. If you're at a place where you would like to invite somebody else into your ID story, we're going to have folks down here who would love to pray for you after the service. If you just want to share something that God might be saying to you and have somebody else to pray with you, they'll be down here. We'd love to do that. Next week, 10-year anniversary celebration. Woohoo. Going to be a big party, so make sure you show up. It's going to be good. We'll see you next week. Have a great time in your ID groups.
And the last time I was there, which was a few years ago, I looked into that second floor area where we worked, and all those shelving units were still there. I couldn't specify any single thing that I did by looking at it, but somehow it was still all mine.
Welcome to The Blur. The Blur is Crossroads' weekly podcast, which is all about blurring the lines between what happens in the building on the weekend at Crossroads and what happens in our lives as we're at work, in our families, whatever. This week, we're going to talk about community.
There are rather a lot of things that I can do pretty well, mainly because I spent most of my life trying to get to where I didn't need anyone. I failed at the not needing people bit, by the way.
This entire ID series journey that we've been on has been one that's happened in the midst of community. For some of us, it's the first time we've ever actually been in a group of people talking about deep life issues. And that can create a sort of paranoia, of course, because all of a sudden people know things about you that you never have revealed before. And yet at the same time, there's something really comforting about it, because all of a sudden you're inviting someone else into your story. This week, Dave Eberhard had a few thoughts about community and how it's played a role throughout the course of his life.
I'm surrounded by progress. I've had the privilege of watching a construction crew build a 3,500-seat auditorium and connect it to the building I work in. I've seen crews working on roofing, the building frame, wiring, you name it. In early January, the first thing I noticed was that what had been a mud pit for a few months now had a steel girder frame constructed on one side. There's this area which used to be outside, now it's part of the main indoor space. And that's just amazing. As I've watched the progress of this whole thing, I've been struck by how critical it is for a crew of people to work together. No single worker bee gets to say that he built this whole monstrous building. Rather, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 men and women can all lay claim to the finished product. I think independence is a myth. I could probably, with the force of my will and labor, produce the roughest small-scale model of this building. I'm sure it wouldn't work correctly or withstand much outside force before it collapsed into a heap of wreckage. But if incorporated into this construction crew, I could learn some valuable trade, say, masonry or HVAC, and they would set me to work on some part of the project, and I would plug away at it until we finished. Afterward, I'd step back to look at this thing and try to point out to my wife which parts of it I did. When I was about 20 years old, I had a summer job in a Sears department store that was under a remodeling phase, and the project name for this was called Power Forward. In stages, Sears was having skilled construction crews do their thing while designers and decorators did their things. I and a small crew of misfit college students had the jobs that fell between skilled labor of construction and the more decorative work of design and display. Largely what we did was assemble shelving units. That's too much like labor for decorators and too much like decorating for construction workers. So we put these steel brackets into wall slots and placed glass shelves onto them. The process went 1. Put all brackets in place. 2. Put all glass in place. 3, clean all the glass. After that, we began moving these freestanding plexiglass shelving units into place. We did other stuff too, I've just forgotten. But I moved away from that part of town, and the last time I was there, which was a few years ago, I looked into that second floor area where we worked, and all those shelving units were still there. I couldn't specify any single thing that I did by looking at it, but somehow it was still all mine. So I have to believe that's how the finished product of this building is going to feel like to the construction crew that I've been watching. This has me thinking about how I exist in a community here. There are rather a lot of things that I can do pretty well, mainly because I spent most of my life trying to get to where I didn't need anyone. I failed at the not needing people bit, by the way, but the impact of being part of a team now is undeniable. I watched the set design folks put together this backdrop that's going to be used, and the layers of complexity and coolness are just staggering. Turns out it's the product of several people building on each other's ideas. In the Bible, the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 12 to 29-ish, talks about how we're all parts of a greater whole, members of a body, that we need one another to function, and that no one part can exist without the others. The point is that we really can't choose to be independent of one another. It doesn't work. Just using this building as an example, if the electricians decided to do the whole thing, there would be a pile of connected wires lying on the ground. No walls. But if they were excluded from the process, none of the lights would work. Seems there was this local man in his mid-30s who died a few months ago from choking on a steak sandwich. He suffocated in his front yard in full view of neighbors, law enforcement, and rescuers. I guess he had dialed 911. He died in plain view because his trained attack dogs wouldn't let anyone approach him. What an awful way to go, knowing that the things you set in place to keep you safe are now keeping you from safety. This man aspired to live alone, to have no commitments. He succeeded. I guess he was a musician on some level because all his music equipment is now for sale by his mother in the local shop of a store owner who told me this whole story. I bought one of his small gadgets and got a life lesson included for free. So now that I've firmly cemented ideas in my mind like independence is a myth and that there's no such thing as a one-man construction crew and that solitude does not equal safety and that we're all parts of one greater body, I can look at this building now with different eyes, and even though I'm just one of thousands of people who are in here, somehow it's a little more like it's mine because I'm part of this greater community. Go figure.
Dave Everhart is a writer, musician, and a regular contributor to The Blur. Well, we'd love to hear your ID story. If you have something you'd like to share on your own or from your group, you can email it to mystory@crossroadscommunity.net. That's mystory@crossroadscommunity.net. This weekend is the big Crossroads 10-year anniversary celebration. It's going to be a big blowout, so we're taking a pause from the ID series for this week. And then next week, when we jump back in, we're going to talk about what do we do with all of these lies that we started to uncover in our life, and how do we take those to God and start figuring out how to move past them. Have a great week.